outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, I didn't get to this last week, Kyle, but the last place we stopped coming home with Sarah and I on our trip was Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, okay. You stopped in Sin City on your way back, huh?
We did. We did a little Carpenter's Legacy show, which is actually pretty bad. But
okay. Some songs. Do explain. I don't even know what that is.
The Carpenters. Richard and Karen Carpenter, a duo from the 70s. No. This is the soundtrack of our love life, Sarah and I, back in the
day. Oh, really?
Yeah. But okay. Performers who... Yeah, they had some gifts, but they were not channeling the Carpenters at all. So, man, how do you not even know the Carpenters? That's just amazing. They asked in the room how many people in there were under 40, and two people raised their hand. They goes, "Do you know who the Carpenters are?" And they went, "Not a clue." They stumbled in. Anyway, we went, though. The reason we stopped over, we're only 5 hours from home at that point, but I'd been driving long enough, so we thought, hey, let's park it. And then we decided to stay an extra day because I wanted to see the Sphere.
Ah, yeah.
That big monstrous thing they've created, billions of dollars. And I'm curious to see what that technology is. And
yeah,
I'm telling you, mega impressive.
Was it?
Mega impressive. Oh, my gosh. Yes, we just went for a tour, and they have a little 50-minute video they play to show you the capabilities of the system. And they tell that little story about human civilization. And as I'm sitting through, I'm going, this is a godless view of human civilization.
Really?
I don't mean godless in the sense that it's anti-Christianity or anti-God, but there is no creator. Mm. It's all came out of soup. And there is no redeemer in the story. So at the end of it, in the video, one of the lines I thought is not the best thing I heard this last week, but the worst thing I heard last week, but true enough, said, "We destroyed that which we loved." Mm-hmm. Speaking of the earth, we destroyed what we had loved. And I think that's pretty much true of humanity without Jesus. It can be anything. Yeah. It can be marriage. It can be job. It can be when you love something and then try to milk it for more than it's worth or more than it can provide. Then you end up destroying it. And you could argue, I mean, it's a whole climate failing narrative to this whole thing, which I'm not against. I think there's some real signs our earth is feeling the stresses of the human infection that visits it, even though some of my friends would disagree with that. But there's no redeeming God in it at the end. Yeah. So mankind has to redeem itself. And the redemption in the movie is sadly farcical because it is to send pairs of humans to every planet in the cosmos. First of all, they have to get off Earth because it dies. So they have to get off the planet and live in space. Mm. And then they take those from space and who are in these orbiting space stations and on the moon and then transport them to planets to plant a whole new Earth. They're almost like Adam and Eve with this little seed of stuff. And I thought, here, man, if your concern is we have used up the resources of Earth, but there will be enough resources left over to put everybody in orbit or on another planet. I was going, man, that's a fallacious hope right there.
Yeah,
it just is not going to work. So I got the end of it going, man, that's the beauty of the screen. 18K is the resolution. And there's one scene where you're on the stage of a concert hall and it's in Europe and it's filled with people looking to you to do something. And as you sit in that theater and it totally surrounds you, you do not know that you're not in that concert hall. You have to tell yourself, this is a video. You cannot, your brain doesn't believe it's a video. It's
Gosh.
Or you're in Africa with giraffes and zebras and your brain just is not going, wow, impressive movie. It's going, how did we get here? Or falling over mountain ranges. And I mean, it's the technology. Quite astounding. I'll give it that.
That narrative is how they choose to frame that technology. That's the video that they show in order to show off the technology. Is that storyline?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I left a lot out so people see it though. There's things in it that will still amaze you and surprise you. But the undercurrent is it's a humanistic story, so there's no God in it. Not at the beginning, not in the middle, not at the end. And we ended last week's podcast by talking about the presence of Jesus is all we have to guide us through this world, whether it's my generation growing up in the 50s and 60s, which had a lot less challenges than we seem to have today. Mm. And if Jesus is not a present voice, not just, I assume he's there because greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world, or any kind of scriptural conclusion, but the actual engagement with his presence in you, however he makes himself known and reveals direction, impression, and transformation in your heart to think more the way he thinks. Without that, I don't know how people are going to navigate what the world brings to it. And yet so many people have been jaded with an appreciation for that kind of presence. They see Christianity as just another religion like all the other religions that's got a lot of work to it and very little payoff and very little reality.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that ties in, and I think that just ties in a little bit to that idea that we were talking about last week about skills versus the life of Christ in our life. And I got into a really interesting conversation 2 weeks ago when I was on that fly fishing trip with the guys. And this theme kept popping up with several of the individuals that were a part of that trip, and that idea of being created to live on joy. And I started to think about this.
Sounds like a drug.
Well, I mean, almost like this, that the fuel of wholehearted life in Father is his joy. And I was like, okay. And so as we kind of unpack that, and as I did a little bit of a scriptural dive after that, there was joy pops up a lot. And the admonishment of the joy of the Lord is my strength on a regular basis. Like the joy, my joy is found in him. And man, if you're thinking about that, if you think about that in the context of whether it be religion, whether it be whatever else this world has tried to offer in order for us to live, like you're talking about living a humanitarian story, if there's no joy, if Father's joy is not a part of that, then what are you left with? I mean, what's fueling that life? What are the undercurrents that you're left with?
None that impress me.
Yeah, really? Like, honestly.
Joy and the way Jesus talks about joy, and even in the most painful of times, that's where joy is most needed. Mm. Now, I mostly think joy is, my circumstances are good, so I can be joyful. The joy of the Lord is my strength comes from, even if there's no grapes on the vineyard, even if there's no, I mean, it really is not in the face of beauty and wonder and all my needs provided, the joy of the Lord is my strength. It is in the midst of chaos and devastation, the joy of the Lord is my strength. Because that I think it's Habakkuk is where that is. And earlier on in that, where it says the cry of the world is, my strength is my God, which is out of that film. That would kind of be under that. My strength is my God. What we can do.
We can build this.
Save the planet. Send
the space stations.
And I love the trajectory of that book where it gets to, okay, no, my strength is not my God. Mm. It is the joy of the Lord is my strength. Jesus comes in the midst of the crucifixion saying that I'm telling you these things so that my joy might be in you and your joy might be full. And these are guys who are plunging into despair as he's talking about going away from them. And he's talking in very strange terms. Yeah. And they know Jerusalem is aligning against them and against their prophet, their Messiah. And it's in that moment, man, that he's reminding them, this is all about joy. Which, if you think it's all about happiness, you're going to miss the point of this.
Correct. Right? Oh, absolutely. Because then your happiness can be influenced by circumstances. But I think that's the beauty of joy, is it's not circumstantially based. It's relationally based. It's grounded in the understanding of who you are in Father, an understanding, a heart understanding of the love and life of Father, of kingdom wholeheartedness and kingdom life. And that's, we were talking a little bit about, one of my friends brought up the conversation in Pilgrim's Progress, where he's in the dungeon of despair. And the longer he's in the dungeon of the despair, the less he realizes that he's in despair. because he's out of sync. He's out of familiarity with living in and through that joy. And man, I think about that even in the context of like, say, whether it be career or relationships or even the institution of Christianity, if we were familiar with living and operating in joy, then a lot of those things that get marketed to us or get passed off to us that should trigger our yuck meter, it actually would. Because it's like, oh, hold on a second. That doesn't align with the joy that I'm experiencing in the life of Christ. That seems to snatch it away. That seems to sell it off. That seems to darken the joy versus being an invitation to see it even flourish even more in the world.
Yeah, if you don't have real joy that is coming from a deeper place than circumstance, then you're going to be in the constant pursuit of trying to find joy in happiness.
Yeah.
And pursuing happiness of itself will not lead to joy. It will actually lead to your destruction.
Yeah.
And the joy that God wants to give us, that Jesus has for us, is a joy that resonates so deeply in our hearts, even in the midst of, I tell you, some of the greatest laughter Sarah and I have had in the last 2 years is coming inside the memories of the pain she's endured.
Yeah.
Watching how God makes himself known. And then something gets said that's just hilariously funny. And we just laugh. And there's a, even though this has been a very painful part of our trajectory,
yeah,
it has been filled with joy. My happiest day ever, the podcast I did almost 2 years ago now, my happiest day ever was in the midst of all this. I knew this, there's more joy in my heart right now than I've ever had in my whole life, being part of what's unfolded in the last 3 or 4 years of God's work in my heart. And that is through circumstances incredibly painful, but presence and connection to Sarah and the ability and grace to share that with other people and watch what God does in them has more joy in it. And it's hard to describe, because I know when you talk about joy, most people think happiness, and I'm not talking about that. No. But it is the joy of moments like that that does fuel the passion to connect more with him.
Yeah, I would agree, Wayne. I mean, I would say I have encountered more relational joy with Father in the last 6 months than I have in a long time. And the last 6 months have been very difficult for my daughter, for Jess. I mean, we've navigated some really hard things. And yet seeing Father come through, seeing community come around us, having those moments and those experiences where, man, just encountering Father's love in little things and in surprising ways. Gosh, and that was all part of the relational process. That was a part of living in the rest, love, and play of Father, was that joy. And man, It also didn't cause the same depletion as it would have in the past because of that joy that was a part of that and because of that fuel that he kept pouring into my heart, which was really intriguing.
So you're suggesting, if it's the fuel of this, where you first started this or some of the conversation last week with the guys in the mountains, doing whatever it is you guys do, does that give us some freedom to recognize where God's joy is in our heart and lean that direction? Does joy become a beacon in that sense to lead us through? Or is it just the byproduct, the fruit of watching God work in our lives?
Honestly, I would say both. Because I think there's been times where, especially in some of the really dark, hard seasons in the last 6 months, it was his joy and his relational promises, his relational culture was a beacon of hope, because there was this too will pass. This will not last forever. I'm in this with you, but there's also a hope for joyous days to come too. And so there was that beacon to keep moving towards, but then also there was just days where it just was a byproduct of being with Father. It was just a sitting in the moment with him and even seeing him show up, one of the questions that got thrown around amongst the guys is, what does it look like for you to live in his joy? And my response was, one of the biggest things over the last 18 months has been living at the pace of my daughters, creating enough margin in my life to be able to pause and enjoy and be present with them and find delight in the world, awe in the world, comedy in the world through their eyes and through their lens. And gosh, that has been, it has been humbling. It has been eye-opening, and it has been a snapshot into the kingdom that was very unexpected. And yet was a refreshing of joy and actually allowed joy to access my heart in a deeper way than I thought was, than I thought previously was possible, which was really intriguing.
It is. I find joy. I'm not wondering if there isn't, like, in relationships I encounter and opportunities I have to find where his joy is and follow that. Mm-hmm. Which to me, it gets strike to the heart of one of the things that I cover in Finding Church, I think is real important, is that we live by endearment to God instead of obligation.
Yes.
So if anger or resignation, okay, God, because you're right, that is not going to lead us to what we're talking about. Yeah. But when I'm endeared to him and he's guiding me through circumstances that present themselves, there's an endearment that's connected to the way God leads. So it's not the pursuit of joy, I don't think, directly. Like, I'm going to pursue joy. Yeah. But it is inside of him, I lean toward the things that bring joy to my life. And I lean away from those things that are a life suck.
Yes.
That just suck the life out of you. And not that there aren't times where God's going to ask you to go into a life suck arrangement to help rescue somebody. Yeah. And that's its own joy. Yeah. There's a joy in that too. But to just not think of obligation and laying down my life is the de rigueur of the kingdom. But there really is a place. I'm telling you these things so that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. And to have joy unspeakable and full of glory, which is, there's no reason this joy should exist here in this circumstance.
Yes.
And yet it does. And yet the joy is there. And to treasure it when it is there. And I think I look for it in times of suffering. We've talked a bit about my prayer times right now that share some of God's agony, that share some of his heart for the brokenness of the world. And we've talked about holding the agony of the world and the victory of the cross in the same space. And I find that the joy of the Lord doesn't relieve all suffering. It can exist inside that suffering. There's joy and there's wounds and passion and hurt. And the two are not mutually exclusive. It's not the negative cancels out the joy, or the joy masks the pain. Yeah. It doesn't mask it. It accompanies it in a way that allows me to go through agony comforted, which is Paul's language in 1 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where he talks about, you know, we despaired even of life. We were taken way beyond what we could endure. And yet God was there to comfort us. And I think that comfort is joy in the midst of agony and in the midst of pain. And if we can get out of the temporal thing of, I hurt when things bad are happening to me, and I'm happy when good things happen to me, and find a reality to joy that's deeper than circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's genuinely a wholehearted, rich joy. Yeah. It's not, I'm going to pretend to be happy while I'm going through a hard time because God likes all that stuff. It's no, there's no fakey to it.
Yeah.
It's, how do I look for where joy is presenting itself and following God on that course, kind of like a beacon that lights the way, saying, okay, here's, I talk a lot about the path that love lights. Mm. And I think there's also a path that joy lights, and they're the same journey. And it's not escapist, and it's not denial of pain. It is joy in the midst of it. But man, can you imagine waking up in the morning and part of my life in Jesus is, where would joy take me today? Mm. And how do I find that? Sarah and I, the last part of our trip, we talked about this next season as Sarah's working through a lot of the coping stuff and whatever, I realized at one point that we were not doing enough to find the places where Sarah's joy unfolds. And so that's kind of, we talked about that coming back. Where is that? It doesn't have to be trips to Hawaii. It didn't have to be things. It's about, where does Sarah find her wholehearted joy? Mm. And a part of my job, I think right now from Jesus, is to help her find that. Mm. And so we're kind of looking forward to this next stage of our journey. We think that's maybe where this is going, as to how does Sarah, who has not known a lot of joy in the 60 years that she's navigated the trauma, how does she find it now? Mm. And where does God make that known? So this is very much something that Sarah and I have been processing ourselves, though we don't have answers for yet. Not sure what that means for her.
I think that's part of becoming reacquainted with joy, living in the experience and the process and the climate of joy. So would you say that it's safe in that context? Is the barometer of, is joy here to be found here? Is joy in the midst of this, or is it not in the midst of that? This, is that a good barometer for making decisions by? That was one of the questions that came up in the midst of this group of 30 and 40 year old guys, is joy a good barometer to base our life off of, to say, okay, I feel nudged by joy in this. And so is that the right following? Do I pursue this because I feel nudged by joy here?
Yeah, if I felt nudged by joy, I would follow the nudge.
Yeah.
You got to draw a good distinction here again between happiness and joy.
Yes.
Because if you're just pursuing your own happiness, you'll end up losing your life. That's what Jesus said. Joy, save your life, you'll lose it. Lose it inside of me and you'll find real life, wholeheartedness. Yeah. But I do think joy invites us into spaces where God works. Hmm. And it would be much more of a marker of that than would do the obligation thing or do the hard thing because that's what I should do for God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not to say joy wouldn't lead us to make some hard choices. Yeah. I think it does often, because true joy comes out of the conflict and the risk and the pain. And as God makes himself known inside that and what he does, one of the things a couple of weeks ago with this group I pray with, and this is, I'm still processing this. It was going to be one of the best things I heard this week, but we were all part of hearing it together. So it seems kind of self-serving, but I still want to share it. I've summarized it this way, as we were talking about our prayer and praying in the chaos of fallenness and the chaos of broken world and broken humanity and broken creation. It was this: you would do well to cease asking me to fix the chaos. Mm. It's not yet time. Instead, celebrate how love penetrates the chaos and uses it for a deeper redemption.
Oof.
And I thought of that when you talk about this joy. That's how I mean joy. Where does, because most of my prayers, I would say if I took the scope of the last 4 years, this wouldn't be true. But if you took my whole life, I would say 95% of my prayers have to do with God fixing the chaos. Stop this, heal that, change that. And 90% of the time, those don't get answered.
Yeah.
And so in the way you're asking for them to be answered. And in this group that we're praying about, it was like, because we can pray, you know, God, stop this and fix that and do that. But those prayers have not been fruitful. Mm. So think less. You do well to cease asking me to fix the chaos. It's not time yet. The day's coming. It will be. God will fix the chaos. Yeah. But right now, instead, celebrate how love penetrates the chaos and uses it for a deeper redemption, which to me is Romans 8:28. It's God works all things together for good. So I'm in the chaos. I'm in a sense of betrayal. I'm in the darkness. I'm in forms of scarcity or feeling like I don't have enough or I'm not enough to meet the situation. So I'm in those kinds of moments and I'm praying for God to fix it, to make me better than I am, to make that circumstance different than it is. Instead of, how is love penetrating the chaos? And now then taking the chaos and using it for a greater redemption. The time will come when God will fix the chaos.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten the idea, it should be now. I mean, Jesus prayed that way and that happened. And he told the storm to go away. So we should pray against all those storms that are out there. And then we pray against them and nothing happens. And our prayers, I think, would be more fruitful inside. How is love penetrating this chaos? Mm. How is love penetrating what Sarah's going through, what I've gone through in the last 3 years, and how I negotiate? Where has love made itself known, and how that changes our point of view, how that helps us see God in a way that we haven't seen him before. And now there's, man, great wonder and great joy in how God penetrates the chaos rather than frustration that he's not fixing the chaos the way I think love would compel him to.
Mm-hmm. Which often him fixing the chaos, right, is thinking back to our conversation last week about 20-somethings, it's give me the certainty, give me the stability, right? Like bring the storm to a pause so that there aren't any ripples in the water anymore. And it's like, what? Right. I don't know about that.
Or make me happy.
Yes.
Fix my the magic wand and fix my circumstances so everything is lovely and I don't have to feel at risk. Instead of in the midst of feeling at risk, mm-hmm. in the midst of extremity and feeling it, instead of getting God to change the circumstance. And if we're looking there, I think the point of what we were discussing with this statement was if we're fixated on changing the chaos, mm-hmm. we miss how love's penetrating it.
Yes.
Because we're so frustrated that I prayed against this circumstance. I prayed for a new job. I prayed for a life partner. God's not giving me one. I'm demanding the chaos be fixed. Mm-hmm. And God's underneath that, letting love penetrate it in ways, because this is what I have appreciated the last 3 or 4 years. I appreciate how all the chaos has adjusted my perspective of God. It's adjusted the way I love Sarah. It's adjusted the way I perceive him working in the people and situations around me. That has changed that whole idea of the trajectory. This will change the trajectory of your life. And that the trajectory is not, I'm going to cease to write. I'm going to cease to do that. It wasn't the trajectory of things.
Yeah.
It was the trajectory of heart, that even the things I do differently. And it has been, I look back on the last 3 or 4 years, and honestly, I am thankful for everything that came our way. If Sarah had not made the choices she made, she wouldn't be finding the life she's finding now. If we don't see God helping her escape even from the situation that was choking the life out of her, which included me.
Yeah.
And seeing God help her do that, very hard in the initial stages. Yeah. And now the fruit of saying, okay, she really did need that. Mm-hmm. She really did. And God helped her. And I did tell him he could do that, although I didn't know what I was exactly agreeing to at the time, which God's really good at that. But nonetheless, that was the prayer and that was the desire and still is. And now, man, I think we can let joy, God's kind of joy, be a navigation point for us. Mm-hmm. It can light the way if we're not just, going into ever fits of darkness and disappointment with God because he's not doing it the way I want. And I see him doing it the way he does do it and trust him that he knows better how to use the chaos than just fixing it would allow him to do. Because he could fix it.
Yeah, he could.
But fix it doesn't serve the problem. This, it's really getting... Some of this contemplation gets to understanding why prayer is mostly misdirected. My prayers are mostly misdirected because it's about fixing. It's not about, okay, what are you doing inside this? And how do I see that? And when I see it, it always brings a smile to my face. Mm. It just does.
When you say that, it honestly brought up a quote from the podcast that we were talking about last week that I'm still kind of mulling over. And it was the idea that protecting our adult children may deprive them of their most valuable life lessons. And I think about that. I'm like, okay, what would father say to that? Like, what would father say to that, Chloe? Cause he's still parenting me. And so, like, if he hasn't removed all the painful life experiences, he hasn't removed all of the challenges and the chaos and the things that Jess and I have faced and our family has faced over even just the last 6 months. And yet, I don't think I would want him to if it meant sacrificing also the lessons and the truth, the experience of him that I have had in the midst of that. I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's true. That's the problem with helicopter parents or lawnmower parents, right? You end up with kids that are not resilient in conflict or disappointment or pain. Yeah. And I think as long as the world's broken, that resilience is so important. Mm-hmm. And teaching kids, not telling them what to do, but teaching them to think through a situation and make good choices.
Yeah.
And a lot of that you often learn by making bad choices. And the parents, and particularly from a religious construct, is no performance is everything. So they've got to do the right thing. Instead of no, they need to learn how to make decisions, and you learn how to make decisions by making bad ones. And that's some stuff that Sarah and I latched onto when our kids were in the point of turning 12, 13 was okay. The last part of this last stage of parenting, the 4, 5, 6 years are still in our home, is being there for them when they make bad choices and loving them, because I want them to make their bad choices while they're still at home and loved, and we can find a way out of them together, than keep them on the straight and narrow with everything I can muster. And then they explode out of the home. And I saw that when I was in college, I went to Oral Roberts University. So kids come there, some kids forced to go there. Like, I will pay for your education if you go to ORU.
Yep.
If you go to any other school, I'm not paying for it. So they're there and hostile to faith. Hostile to their parents, but getting the free education. And to watch them in the first couple of years just go completely off the scale in terms of, like, the whole slingshot effect. Though I've been stretched so tight here, I'm going way out there somewhere and just live a licentious lifestyle, just do all kinds of prodigal son type things. And then some come back out of that. But we saw that enough to go, okay, I want my kids to be decision makers. And so increasingly, instead of, man, you would know the kids, what should I do? And you'd know the right thing for him to do.
Yeah.
And you would say, well, what do you think? And where might God be in this? So why don't you ask God about it? And then watch them make decisions because they feel like God has put something on their heart. Even if I might be a little wrong, let it go, and they'll learn something. And I think by mitigating those experiences, I think if God, I can't imagine the believer I would be if God answered 90% of my prayers. Insufferable is a word that comes to mind, because you've never tested. You've never been through struggle.
Yeah.
You don't know how to love other people in their struggle because you don't know that you've been in them yourself. And I think if God had answered all those prayers, I think I don't think I would be the human I am today, because God's capacity, and this is true, I think, in Eden right away, he's going, I can use this. Mm-hmm. I can use the brokenness of creation to set a path of redemption in people. And that's going to come through challenge and pain.
Yeah.
There's not a pain-free existence. God didn't promise us that. And the sooner we can understand that David's saying God delivers him out of all his afflictions, doesn't mean you won't have any.
Yeah.
It means God will walk through them with you and bring you out of it. I grew up believing that, man, if you just prayed hard enough and you believed stuff, then the chaos of the world wouldn't touch the righteous.
Mm.
And Jesus kind of sets that on its ear
by
his own example and by what his disciples went through. And he could have spared them all that. He could have sent Peter home that night. You know, you're going to deny me 3 times. No, just go home, go to bed. I'll see you Sunday. He could have mitigated that, but that experience was important for something to die in Peter that needed to die.
Yeah.
And it wasn't God breaking Peter. I hate that analogy of God breaking the leg of a lamb to hem it in. It's not that. It's allowing the darkness in your life to surface and the consequences of it to help you lean out of the darkness and into the light.
Yeah, I think about just the way that I often prayed, especially growing up. And it's like, man, that if God would have answered them, graciously, he didn't, a lot of them. And if he would have answered them, I would have turned into a narcissistic bubble boy. I mean, literally, like, I had this idea of, like, this image popped into my head of, have you seen those, like, those massive inflatable bubbles that people climb inside of and do, you know, that was,
roll them down
the hill. That was the image that I had of, like, me rolling through life with this, like, narcissistic bubble all the way around me where I'm just mowing people down as I'm rolling around in this bubble of my own self-protection and self-absorption.
And wouldn't it be like God to take the chaos of the universe and let it redeem us from what's narcissism or selfishness or the things that make us less than he made us to be, and to use the stresses of life and the uncertainties of life to actually unravel, as we've talked about in the whole transformation thing, to reveal himself and unravel the Christmas lights and allow us to live at love, at rest and play with him, and watch what that changes about our lives. And then we become a better version of ourselves. I have said this before. I love the Wayne that Living Loved has brought me to. And I, when it started for me, I have things to teach you that more if you leave than if you stay. I had no idea what that was. I thought I was good. And now I realize, oh my gosh, how much of that was fed by Wayne's need to be somebody, by Wayne's, you know, and I not that I didn't have gifts, not that I couldn't teach well, not that people weren't excited about gifts I had, but they were serving me and not the kingdom. And it, they were actually encroaching on a distorted view of myself that would have led to pride and led to all kinds of things. We're let's say we're leading, not would have led, we're leading. And man, this phase of the journey has been extraordinarily wonderful, that God can penetrate the chaos, not protect me from it, penetrate it, and watch what love does. And now how you see other people, how you see him, how you're able to be with people in pain. Man, I know how different that is from 40-year-old pastor, gifted teacher guy who loved the stage more than I loved the engagement of people. And I liked happy people. I liked people that did all the stuff that made me happy instead of, you know, walking with people through the reality of life, walking Sarah through this part of her journey. There is no greater joy. I've done nothing more enthralling than what Sarah and I get to negotiate every day. And I know it's because somebody hurt her. Somebody hurt her deeply.
Yeah.
But I get to walk with her while God restores that. And that's pretty good use of the broken world that we navigate.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you want to talk about an infuriating way to turn that on its head, right? I mean, what the enemy has intended for our destruction, for our woundedness, our demise, our despair. I mean, oh my gosh, for God to be able to take that and author some of our greatest freedom from those spaces, because it does draw some of that stuff to the surface and allows his love to penetrate it, heal it, bind it back up, break the chains of it. Oh my gosh. Like, talk about a glorious way to turn that on its head.
And that's joy for us. Yeah. That really is the wonder of joy, is when God untangles something and you see something move in your life and you go, oh my gosh, God, you are outstanding. That's amazing. And so is it okay to let joy nudge us to life? I think that's what Jesus is saying. Yeah. This is not about, oh, the world's horrible and you come follow me and life will be miserable. It's about my joy in you and you're joyful. And that doesn't exclude suffering and pain from this world. It's Paul and Barnabas, after being beaten, sitting in the cell, singing and rejoicing, and earthquake comes and stuff. They're finding Jesus penetrating their pain. With his joy. And then they've got not only a story to tell, but they've experienced, they lived. And the night of their beating becomes a night of great joy. And if we could wrap our heads around that, not just, hey, I'm going to lie about all this stuff so we don't have to, I'm going to pursue happiness by not being honest. I mean, Paul could have gotten out of it, right? Saying he's a Roman citizen. Yeah. He doesn't do it. Barnabas going through it, I'm going to go through it with him. He does. And it's extraordinary the things that joy will lead you to do that is not what you'd think it is if you're just in the pursuit of happiness, which I know is one of those inalienable rights that Thomas Jefferson gave to us, the pursuit of happiness. But man, the pursuit of his joy would be a far better way to live, I think.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.